Today's studio drink, Corona Familiar, the one-quart so-called family bottle. Though, truth be told, I'm taking this one on solo. I am a sucker for a humble lager, anywhere in the world, but I'm drinking Mexican beer today for the fermentation. That's because this episode's guest is Paulina Garcia, a talented purveyor of food in Oaxaca, who is not only a partner in Bulenc, the unstoppable bakery and hangout in downtown Oaxaca, but is also the owner of Suculenta, a wildly inventive fermentation and canning shop that churns out things like Hoja Santa mustard, Chiquitana ant salsa, mushroom pate, jalapeno escabeche. She built this all while being something of a stranger in those lands. Her original home is Saltillo, in the Americanized north of Mexico. And we talk not just about fermentation, but also about being a Mexican in Mexico and yet very far from home. I'm Nathan Thornburg, and you're listening to The Trip, drinking with exceptional people around the world. Where are you from?
I'm from Sabinas, Coahuila. It's like a tiny town in Coahuila, which is pretty north, but I lived all my life in Saltillo.
But we are not in the north of Mexico right now. We're in Oaxaca City, which if I think a lot of Americans have this kind of that slightly dusty, norteño, like desert picture of Mexico, is like that's Mexico for most Americans.
Yeah.
Oaxaca is rainy mountains and big Pacific coast and lots of little valleys and just a very different vibe.
Yeah, pretty different than the stereotype, I think.
If you grow up in Coahuila, do you go to Texas?
Yeah, pretty often.
Yeah, you go shopping on the border?
Yeah.
What's the good stuff there?
Yeah, just the mall.
Yeah.
And breakfast at Denny's and yeah.
Were your eyes ever on southern Mexico? Did you ever think about this part of the country much?
No. Well, I didn't really know, like, only like Cancun.
Mm-hmm.
And we're pretty Americanized in the north of Mexico. Like,
yeah.
We're not exactly gringos, of course, but
right.
I think our way of thinking there, it's pretty Americanized. So when we travel, I mean, not everyone, of course, but like in general.
Yeah.
When you take vacations, you go to Cancun. Like
and go
pretty
to
basic.
Senor Frogs.
Exactly.
Just
like, yeah, like Coco Mongo. Yeah, like that's like our way of thinking.
Yeah.
So, no, I never been to any other part of the South before, but a few friends of mine like had been coming to Oaxaca and they were saying like, it's amazing, it's amazing, it's amazing.
When they come down and say it's amazing, what do you think they were talking about?
Oh, well, because they come to Oaxaca and they go to San Jose del Pacifico, do mushrooms, and then go to the beach.
Oh, well, shit, that is amazing.
Yeah. So, like, I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah, right. It's like camping in the desert, but with psilocybin.
Yeah,
and incredible
no, it's
waves.
Pretty great. Yeah, so that was the plan, and we came with my boyfriend at the time. It was, like, I don't know, like 6 years ago. We came for like 10 days and it was great, but it was also like downtown. I didn't see anything. We arrived to this horrible hostel at this horrible place and we were like, no, let's go to San Jose tomorrow. This is horrible. And we did mushrooms. It was a really bad experience because we took them at night.
Oh, yeah.
And I took a whole trip and I just couldn't leave the room.
Oh, man.
I mean, it wasn't bad. It was just like 7 hours sitting on a bed, confused.
I've been there.
It was really confusing. So, but I mean, of course, the forest was amazing. And then the beach.
Outside of your room.
The next day.
Okay.
Yeah.
once psilocybin had.
Yeah. And the beach was amazing as well. And that was it. I mean, I never thought I was going to move here. Not even when I came for vacations.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like an experience, and I was like, oh, okay, Oaxaca is nice. That's
yeah.
It.
Oaxaca is the kind of place, like Key West, where I grew up, where people, I think, come here and think, oh, shit, I'm not going back home. Like, that does happen.
A lot. A lot.
Because it just has some thing, some vibe. Like, it's a manageable city. You can sort of see yourself in this setting.
Yeah, it's a very attractive city it's a really inspiring city, and also I feel like it's so abundant in so many things that a lot of people from different disciplines or like whatever they find something here. Like, so I feel like that's why a lot of people stay in Oaxaca, because there's a lot of possibilities.
You now run this thing that's part of, I think, an integral part of, what it means to be doing interesting food here in Oaxaca. And you're running it with, I don't know, what would you call them, like expats? I mean, internally displaced norteños, like
Norteños in the south.
Norteños in the south. So basically, all of your partners are from the Saltillo
Yeah. Yeah, I
area
have
too.
three business partners. All guys. And all from Saltillo.
And you guys didn't come down like in a big VW bus together. You came
No,
down
no.
separately.
Yeah, separately. It was really, really. I don't even know how I got here. It was four of us. And the first one that came down here was Juan Pablo, because another friend of us, also from Saltillo, moved to Oaxaca and opened a restaurant. So Juan Pablo wanted to move to Oaxaca because he was sick of living in Saltillo, and he moved and was working at the restaurant. There he started baking bread.
Because they had an oven that they weren't really using at all hours, and he
And
just.
it was, yeah, they will lend him the oven and he will like bake, and then he will have like a lot of bread, like baked breads. So then he needed to sell them. And he took them to this organic market, but they wouldn't let him in because there was already another guy selling bread there. But it wasn't sourdough or anything, it was just like regular Mexican bread. So he started selling it outside the market, and all the Europeans and Americans that live here, like that moved to Oaxaca, they recognized the bread immediately and they started to buy it. And then Bernardo contacted Juan Pablo. Bernardo was living in New Zealand at the time. He lived there for 4 years and a half. Illegally, of course.
So he was working, which meant he was working in restaurants.
Yeah. And he has some money saved, and he told Juan Pablo, like, I have $3,000. I can give them to you and open a bakery, and I'm just gonna be a partner, but like I'm living in New Zealand, I'm not gonna work. 3 days after Juan Pablo ordered the oven, Bernardo got deported.
Oh shit.
3 days after. He
Wow.
yeah, so
That.
he came to Saltillo and he was like, no, I'm not staying in Saltillo. I already invested in this bakery in Oaxaca. I'm moving to Oaxaca.
Oaxacan baker
And
now.
then he moved to Oaxaca, and my boyfriend at the time, which is the same guy I came with to Oaxaca 6 years ago,
When you
the
were.
same guy that is my business partner right now.
Got it.
This is when it gets interesting. So we were dating. I was living in Saltillo. He was working at this farm in Querétaro, and he quit his job and he was like, no, I'm going back to Saltillo and then I'll see what I'll do. And I was like, perfect, I'll see you here. I haven't seen you in months. I'll see you in Saltillo. And then he calls me and he says, you know what? My friend Juan Pablo and Bernardo just opened up a bakery like 1 week ago in Oaxaca. I think I'm gonna go down there to check it out and just like be there for a couple of weeks and then I'll come back. And I was like, okay. He never came back. That
That was it.
was it. He came to Oaxaca. He came to the bakery. They were living in the bakery. They didn't have money to rent like an apartment, because they invested everything in there,
Spend it all on dough.
and rent in Oaxaca is expensive, and deposit, etc. So they were actually sleeping on the floor, and like they lived in the bakery for like 3 or 4 months.
It's just three
The
dudes
three
living.
dudes sleeping on the floor.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you thought
On
this is,
yoga mats.
this is, move aside, guys. Roll out a mat for me.
And I had already planned a trip with one of my best friends to Oaxaca before all this. Like, we bought the plane tickets like 6 months ago, like before all this. So But then it was like the perfect excuse. It was like an instant success. Like, well, it's bread. And it's good bread. And Oaxaca was missing that. Like,
yeah. Well, and it's Mexican bread culture is interesting because it's ubiquitous. It's a huge part of Mexico and Mexican diet.
Yeah.
But also, you know, this is the thing about pan dulce, you know, which is something that's a huge part of like our family's diet. And as Mexican Americans are crazy for that stuff. But it's like the same flavor in a bunch of different shapes.
Yeah.
I mean, generally, like there can be artisanal, incredibly well done, but mostly I think like mainstream Mexican bread is pretty underwhelming.
Also, it's like, it's pretty cheap. Like you can buy like a sweet bread for like 2 pesos or 3 pesos, or like the bread for like a torta. It's actually like a peso and 50 cents. That's like, you find that on the street. Like,
yeah. Yeah, for context, it's about 17 or 18 pesos to a dollar. So, you know, some kind of bread that costs 2 pesos is like a 10-cent bread.
Yeah, maybe that's why it's like a really cultural thing, because it is for everybody. Like, everybody can buy bread. But also, like, to make it that cheap, the ingredients you use will need to be, like, it's a lot of levadura, instant yeast, a lot of that. So it's not really nutritious.
Yeah.
It's not butter, it's margarine, you know, like.
Yep.
So, well, you have to. You're going to sell it at 1 peso and you still need to win money out of that. Then.
Right. I mean, which is always incredible with these panaderias too. Just, you know, they're moving, they're making it up on volume, you know.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Like, they're moving a lot of pieces of bread, but you're right, it's I mean, you can't really compare it with like sort of artisanal baking.
No. And also, like, for example, it was a little bit hard at first with Mexicans to accept the bread, because they will come into the bakery and they will be like, what, 20 pesos for a piece of bread? Like, are you kidding me? Like, it's a lot. But it's like, but it's laminated and it's butter, organic from this town that it's next to Oaxaca, and it's chocolate, and it's like, you know, like the ingredients are always like high quality, but we're not used to those prices for a bread.
Yeah. So what's the education process like on that? It's just telling, you know, walking them through the ingredients. A big crusty bread is not like the bread of a Mexican imagination.
No, you know? No, no. So at first it was hard, but we got a lot of support of the foreign people and the tourists that come in Oaxaca. Like, so the locals started to, like, one by one, like, okay, I'm going to try it. Okay.
Well, and for obviously this, the bakery and Suculenta, your new business there, you know, it's not for the poor or the working class. Like, this, these are expensive foods and they're really well made.
And it's more about like also the nutrition, not just like, okay, yes, it's not, I will agree with you with, it's not for everyone, like the price, but I'm always really surprised when this happens, and it gives me like a lot of joy to see it. Like, when people from the mountains come, like, because they live in the mountain, right? But they come to the city and they have to buy stuff or deliver stuff or whatever, and then they go back to the mountains.
Yeah.
And they come to Belenc and they buy the sourdough to take to the mountain.
That's
so
awesome.
It's awesome because I mean, they spend like, it's 70 pesos for one piece, for 1 kilo. So, I mean, every time I turn it into dollars, it's ridiculous. But
it's not
going to sound expensive.
That's not the it's not the favorite sport I know of Mexicans.
Yeah,
these
like
days.
Okay, so it's like $4.
That's $4. But keep in mind that the average salary here is like $4,000 a year,
and that you would spend at most 20 pesos on savory bread, not 70.
Right.
At Chavata, it's like 8 pesos.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like our cheapest savory bread. And
well, and probably
people do buy it.
Yeah, I think one sourdough is going to just have as, you know, as much nutrition or like value or you know, goodness, or certainly nutritional value as 70, you know, rolls that are made from kind of like highly processed flour and instant yeast. How did Suculenta get started, and what is it? Like, how did that all kind of come out?
Pretty much like Bulenk, really random, really...
With yoga mats?
With yoga mats. It was pretty weird as well. Like, so they're working at the bakery, and they bring another friend from Saltillo just to work there.
Is anyone left in Saltillo? Is it just like an empty town with a bunch of Oaxaqueños coming
we're
back?
We're the only ones in Oaxaca, but it's like, I think we're pretty strange for like our friends in Saltillo. I think it's like we're the weird ones that are in the south.
Just drinking mushroom tea and making amazing breads.
Bread and so another friend came just like, he only came for like a year.
Okay.
And his girlfriend, which was the friend that I came with for vacations, a really good friend of mine, she came for 6 months. And we were all living, it was like a Friends episode. We were all living on the same building. Like Bernardo, Juan Pablo, Daniel, me, Juan, Caro, in two apartments.
Wow, okay.
So it
just
was...
just constantly going back and forth.
Yeah, and constantly in the bakery. And my friend Caro was also freelancing on something else. So we had a lot of free time, like me and Caro.
Yeah.
Not the guys at the bakery. Like a lot of free time. And no money. And so we wanted to do something that wouldn't take a lot of time. And we were always at the bakery. The bakery was always full of people. So we thought like something that we could sell in the bakery, because they didn't sell anything but bread.
Right.
So we were like, jam. They need jam. There's no jam. Okay, how do you do jam? So then we started like just looking at recipes, and then we started experimenting, and then... of course, I made, like, the brand and the... it wasn't called Suculenta at the time.
What was the first brand?
It was horrible. I don't want to say.
No, come on.
It was the Jar Bar.
Jar Bar? Oh, man, that sounds like a bad Star Wars or something.
No, it was horrible. It was just, like, the first test.
All right, Jar Bar.
The Jar Bar. And so we had that, and it was only, like, okay, 6 jams. And then they will sell, and then, okay, 8. Okay, 4. And it was, we didn't really make money because we always need to buy like more fruit or more something.
Yeah, that's like, it's not a super high margin thing when you're making like small batch jam.
No, definitely.
Otherwise,
wasn't.
Vermont would be the economic center
kept us
of the states.
Busy.
Yeah, okay.
And then my friend says, like, I'm moving back to Saltillo. They were going back. And I was like, okay, I'm going to stop because it wasn't fun. I mean, it was really cool to experiment, but it was like, no, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And then Daniel told me, no, let's keep doing it because there's nothing selling in the bakery and it goes really well with bread. Let's keep doing it. And I was like, okay, but you're going to help me because I don't want to do this alone. And he was like, okay, I'll help you. And then I was like, we need to change the name. So I chose Suculenta. Of course, I got bored of jam, like, instantly. So I was like, no, I want something else. Like, how do you do pickles? So then I started looking for recipes and making tests. And then I was like, how do you do peanut butter? How do you do this? And then I found out that everything is really easy.
Oh.
Like, I thought it was something really complex.
Yeah.
It's not. It's like once you get how to preserve and the different ways of preserving,
yeah,
it's pretty easy. And it opened this whole other thing. Like, oh my God, so you can preserve anything.
Yeah.
And we're living in Oaxaca, where it's the most biodiverse, one of the most biodiverse places on earth. Like,
yeah.
Like, okay. And that was the start of what I think it was. What it is right now, Suculenta, which is like preserving food, preserving ingredients, preserving, like, for example, in Oaxaca, we have like 30 different varieties of mangoes.
No shit.
30. Like in Saltillo, we have two
Right.
and the supermarket.
Right.
30. Like
You have the
there's
one on the
like
left side of the supermarket aisle on the
25
right.
types of bananas. There's a
Yeah.
banana called apple banana, and it tastes exactly like an apple and a banana combined.
No.
There's a pineapple mango.
No,
There,
no, no.
yeah.
This is the mushroom tea speaking.
No,
These things don't
I
exist.
swear. It was pretty surprising for me. Like the pineapple mango,
Yeah.
you have to make a hole in, like on the skin,
Yeah.
because it's like pretty watery. They
Okay.
use it for water, like to make mango water.
Okay.
But it's so watery that you need to make a hole and then you squeeze it and then you drink it and it tastes like pineapple.
No, that's a pineapple.
No, it's
You're
a
talking
mango.
about
It's
a
a mango.
pineapple.
It's a mango. I swear. There's blue mangoes. Well, anyway, there's like so many things and ingredients that I've never seen before in Oaxaca. Well, like in my life.
Yeah.
And with Suculenta, I was like, that's how you preserve that flavor.
Right.
And
So that like disbelieving gabachos like me will then have to believe it because it's been jarred
it's true.
and it's on the in the pantry.
I love that concept. Like to have food there, sitting, waiting.
Like in an apocalyptic kind of
Yeah,
like when
exactly.
everything goes to
I
hell.
got obsessed with like the visual of how the jar looks at the end. Like for example, the pickled carrots. Like, okay, let's put fresh thyme on the bottom and then the garlic and then the carrots and then the seeds and then like the visual product at the end.
Yeah.
It's I fell in love with that. Like it was pretty satisfying to like finish a batch and have like a bunch of jars and then put the labels and then put them on the shelves. Like visually it was gorgeous, so I think that helped. And then producers started to come. Like we started to make relationships with producers of everything, like mushrooms, and they will bring local things like from the mountains, like apples and like fruits and a lot of things. A lot of weird things came through those doors.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like a coyote skin, and I was like, no, thank you, sir. Like, are you sure you don't want to buy it? And I was like, no, thank you. The mushroom guy
He
came.
just wanted you to pickle some coyote
Yeah,
skin.
well, yeah, a lot of weird ingredients have passed through those doors, but we always try to like be really open with the producers because they have like the good stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So our direct relationship with the producers is really important in Suculenta.
In a place like New York, obviously you have people who really excel at sourcing unusual ingredients or even unusual but super local ingredients. Is there anything, there's not really a distribution system like that here. Like you as a storefront have to know the people who will bring you the stuff from the mountains. Otherwise, you're not really gonna get it.
They don't even have signal like for cell phones because you're in the mountain. So you can't even call them and tell them, can you bring me more mushrooms? No. They just show up with 10 kilos of shiitake and they're like, pay me. And you're like, okay. I mean, now I say, okay, when I was running Suculenta at first without Bulenk, it was like, oh my God. Like, I have to buy it because then he's not gonna come back anymore and or they're going to go bad or
Right.
like they're bringing you this treasure, but it's also a lot of money and I wasn't ready because they never
Asked if
let
you
you
wanted it,
know
right?
that they're coming. So it was pretty much like that year, like just not earning any money.
Yeah, so the country club's
Yeah.
visual appearance has suffered
I have no
greatly.
idea. I lost contact. So I didn't have a salary. It was a little bit rough. Me and Daniel broke up
Yeah.
during that time.
Yeah.
I was so lost. Like,
Yeah.
new business, owing money, not earning money, ending a relationship of 8 years,
Wow, okay.
and having a business with him. So,
And maintaining the business,
yeah.
still being in business.
Yeah. So,
That's a that, that's a that's
it
a
was a dark time.
yeah.
It was a really, really dark time.
What do you do in Oaxaca when it's dark time? You go back to San Juan Pacifico. And
San Jose. I didn't have any money. I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't go anywhere.
You couldn't even go up to the mountains to drink mushroom tea.
No, I was actually thinking, like, I'm going to have to sleep in Suculenta. Like, really, really.
Because the boys had taught you how it's done.
You laugh, but I was actually, like, considering, like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Well, during that year that we were in the shop, we were talking to the family that owns the whole house. It's a really big house downtown. And we were trying to convince them to rent us the whole house because the bakery only had 6 seats.
Yeah.
And it was always full with people outside eating, standing up. So lines of people wanted to buy bread, but some wanted to eat a sandwich, but some wanted to drink a coffee. So they needed the space. It was like they were starting to like consider like looking for a bigger place. And so we convinced the family, I don't know how, but it was 9 months of meetings and meetings and meetings and convincing. And so we convinced them and they decided to rent us the whole house, which is like, it's over 100 years old and it's 900 square meters.
It's a big freaking house.
It's a big house. It's like 14 rooms.
Yeah.
2 stories, a patio.
No, it's gorgeous. And it reminds me, it's got like a very Cuban, just kind of, you know, the layers of plaster that are falling apart and there's brick underneath and you can see the different paint jobs that have gone over the years.
It's really old and it's gorgeous. Really rustic. So they say yes. And then one day Daniel came and he was like really serious and I was like, what's wrong? And he was like, well, apparently my partners want to make you a partner. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, they want to make you a partner. And I was like, of course I was inside like, yes. But outside I was like, okay, this wasn't expected. I mean, Suculenta, it's like a really pretty project and I knew it was going to be successful, but I knew also that it was going to take a lot of time. And Boulenc, it attracts a lot of people. It was already a success.
Yeah.
So I was like, of course, definitely.
Yeah.
Let's do it. And
my little experiment was just to like put a picture of, you know, the breads that we had there the other day on Instagram, just see who I know in New York who would say, oh, I fucking love that place. And sure enough, like they come out. I mean, it's like,
oh, cool. It's the Mexican tartine. The Oaxacan tartine.
There it is. Is there a Mexican fermentation? Obviously, there's a lot of fermenting happening in Mexican.
Yeah, but not in Oaxaca.
How do Oaxacans preserve their food? Like, what's their... They're not doing fermentations.
They don't really preserve much. I mean, there are some preserves, of course, but they make some jams, escabeche, of course, but Oaxaca has food all year long, so there's not that need of preserving.
Right.
It doesn't exist because we don't have long winters. We don't have the necessity. And it's always pretty abundant. There's always so much of everything. So I think that's why in Mexico we don't have like a lot of types of...
Right.
I mean, we do have, of course, fermented things and... Of course, but it's different. Like the culture of canning, we don't have that. Only escabeche.
So what's the escabeche here?
It's a pickle jalapeno peppers with carrots and cauliflower and onion.
That's served quite often.
Yeah, it's just like...
Yeah.
Just to eat more chili.
Some way we can possibly eat more chili. Got it. Okay. Is it that same kind of education process that you have with sourdough? Of like getting people... Here, both Mexicans and international people just kind of like fired up to, you know, to have your pickled radishes or your whatever it is that you're trying to get them into.
What we do right now is we, like if you order a sandwich in the restaurant, you get a side salad with a little bit of kimchi or a little bit of sauerkraut or anything that we ferment for free. So you can just like taste it. Some people don't eat it. Some people eat it. Some people ask. Some people already know what it is. Well, basically everything that we serve in the restaurant, we have available at the shop.
What's your plan for Suculenta? Like, obviously it's very tied into Boulenc now. Do you want to see it on shelves around Oaxaca, around Mexico, around the world?
Yeah. we get a lot of people that want the product, like even in New York and like all around the US and also in several places of Mexico. But we weren't ready at the time because we were sharing the kitchen with the restaurant. And we just finished the Suculenta kitchen on the second floor. So, yeah, the plan is to have the product selling in other places. Of course, like, that's the whole idea of Suculenta, that you can actually bring one flavor to another part of the world.
Right. You cannot do that with your sourdough.
And you cannot do that with, like you can't take mangoes from here to France.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, you can't fly with fresh fruit, but you can fly with a preserve.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, French always buy the mango jam to take to France. Sometimes they buy, like, the liter of mango jam because they don't have mangoes there. So that's, like, the most interesting part, I think. Like, you can travel with the flavor.
Yeah.
And Oaxaca has a lot of flavors. So yeah, definitely started selling more in several places. Another thing that I would like to do is... in Mexico, there's a lot of waste in food because there's a lot of abundance, and sometimes, like, the supermarkets, they want to pay really, really cheap price to the producers.
Yeah.
And sometimes they go on a, how do you say, huelga?
They go on a strike.
Uh-huh. And what they do is they throw away all the produce to the street. Because it's so cheap that it's not even worth it, you know?
Like, right.
They want to pay so little, and it's such hard work, and they work all year.
So it's like French farmers dumping milk on City Hall.
Exactly.
It's just like, fuck you guys.
And that happens a lot. And I'm like, no! Why are you throwing away the tomatoes? You can make ketchup. You can make tomato jam. You can make... So what I would like to do is to share the... knowledge that I've acquired in the last 3 years, which is maybe not much, but if you go to the beach, for example, and you go to the lady on the side of the road that sells mangoes, she sells mangoes beneath the huge mango trees, and she sells just like the boxes of mangoes, but around her there's like kilos and kilos and kilos and mangoes that are like
just fell and
they fell and they rot and that's like, for example, that don't let them go to waste. Like,
you
can make vinegar, you can make jam, you can make...
fermentation dreams.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paulina.
No, thank you.
Awesome to talk to you.
Yeah.
The Trip is hosted by me, Nathan Thornburg, produced by Josie Holtzman and Danielle Roth of Future Projects. Our editor is Roads and Kingdoms' Taffy Mukunyadze. Our executive producers are me and Matt Goulding, also of Roads and Kingdoms. Special thanks to Dan the Automator for the music and Adele Rodriguez for the art. Next week, the Trip stays in Oaxaca to talk with Nikki Nakazawa about how to make and market mezcal the right way. We'll meet you there.